you know, unless you've been hiding under a rock or maybe on a extended boundary waters trip, you know that recently NASA's New Horizons, the first mission to Pluto and the Kuiper Belt, ended its 9.5-year journey to reach Pluto and produce some interesting studies of Pluto and its distant neighbors in the Kuiper Belt. Our next guest, Park Kunkel, has guided more than 6,000 students through a planetarium in a teaching career that spans over 40 years. He's earned several Teacher of the Year awards at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, teaching astronomy, physics, computer programming, engineering, and mathematics. He has a master's degree in physics from the University of Minnesota and has been a guest on local and national media discussing astronomical defense events. He is a founding member of the former Minnesota Planetarium Society and currently serves on the advisory board of the Bell Museum of Natural History. He joins us now to help us understand the New Horizons mission and Pluto. Park Kunkel, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you very much. It's delightful to be here, and I love the Al Green music just before that. It's just with Pluto, and now it's Moon Charon, and all we're discovering is stay together. It's
cosmic
great.
Connection. Yeah, exactly. We're all together. We're all in this together, and what could be, yeah. Okay, well, why don't you give us a brief overview of the New Horizon Pluto mission? How long has it been in the works and so on?
Sure. These kinds of missions take a very long time, so this was started probably 20 years ago in trying to put mission statements together, and then they either do or do not get funded. So eventually this one was chosen as a fast flyby mission to Pluto. It's a little cheaper to do it that way. If you try to stop at Pluto, you have to carry a lot of fuel with you, and that gets very expensive. So this flyby mission was launched about 9.5 years ago, and here we are at its culmination, where we are flying past Pluto and getting lots and lots of good data, which we won't see most of until throughout this next year. It takes that long to download all the data we're getting.
So interesting. So, I mean, you know, I don't understand. Maybe you can comment on this. How do scientists have so much patience waiting for decades, basically, to get answers once they've worked up a program or a study like this?
It's one of the hazards of being an astronomer that you just can't do experiments on things that are 3 billion light years away. You just have to wait for the message to get to you.
All kids have heard about Pluto before. All of us have heard about Pluto, but tell us a little bit about what we knew about Pluto before New Horizons.
Oh, absolutely. Pluto wasn't discovered until 1930. It's that far away, and it's that small that no one could see it. In fact, if you wanted to see it tonight, you couldn't. It is up in the sky tonight. If you looked around midnight and looked south at the constellation of Sagittarius, it's just above that. But you'd need a major telescope in order to see it, in any case. So it was discovered in 1930, and then not until many years later, just recently, did we discover it had a moon, and then even more recently, it had discovered several more moons as well. And so it's very difficult to get data about Pluto. The best Hubble Space Telescope image just showed blotches here and there. But we still knew that it had a nitrogen hotspot, for example, a nitrogen atmosphere with a carbon monoxide hotspot. We knew it was icy because you can measure the temperature of the thing. It's about 390 degrees below zero. So if you're feeling cold this winter, just think about Pluto, and much, much warmer. So we had some idea. We also knew that it was different than other planets. For example, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars are very dense and have solid surfaces. Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune are much larger, gaseous. They don't have solid surfaces, much less dense. Pluto is kind of in between them. It had a solid surface, but its density was more like a comet. And then we'd started discovering a whole bunch of other objects out in that area beyond Neptune. So now we know there are hundreds of Pluto-like objects out there, Pluto being the largest of them.
Is this what we're calling the Kuiper Belt?
Maybe
exactly. We'll get to that a little later, maybe, but
sure.
If we have time. So Pluto, it's sort of amazing to me that we had never had any good images of Pluto before. I mean, with all the telescope and the Hubble telescope and everything, I thought, well, you know, because we have all these fine images of Saturn and Jupiter and Neptune and Uranus, that I thought we must have seen this planet close up before, but not so.
Exactly. That the good images of Neptune and Uranus basically come from the Voyager mission from a number of years back, but we've never gotten a mission out there to Pluto, so that's what's so exciting about this one.
Well,
and Hubble has a limit to, you know, how big a cross it can see. And even looking at Pluto, it's a long ways away, and it's very small.
How long a ways away?
I guess the easiest way to think about its distance, I mean, you can talk billions of miles and kind of thing, but if we were out there on Pluto and sent a message back at the speed of light to Earth, it would take about 5 hours to get here. And then if you wanted to reply, it would take another 5 hours to get out there. So it's an interesting question that you ask, because it reflects on the mission and how you have to operate this. If you were to think about driving a car and you see something running across the road in front of you, you react almost immediately and put the brakes on. But you can't do that with this spaceship. If you sent a message, you know, if the spaceship saw something and needed to turn and sent a message to you, well, it would be 5 hours to get to you, and then you'd have to respond. It'd be 5 hours till it got back to the mission, and then the mission would turn at that point. Well, driving a car and waiting 10 hours to turn is probably not the best way to drive.
Oops, yeah, a little too late, yeah. So the other thing about Pluto is it used to be, when I grew up, a planet.
Yes.
And now it's not. You want to just briefly touch on that little scenario?
Sure, I'd be glad to, because it's so much fun to tease astronomers, and I am one, you know, about that. But it's basically humans want to classify things and put them in categories. And so when Pluto was discovered, even back in 1930, very shortly afterwards, we knew it didn't quite fit. It wasn't like Earth and the inner planets, and it wasn't like the outer planets, the gassy outer planets. It was somewhere in between, and it was small, and it had an odd orbit. And so we couldn't see anything else but Pluto out there, so okay, we'll call it a planet. But now that we've discovered hundreds of other objects like that out there, now we got a problem. Do we have 100 and some planets, or do we have, you know? So currently the definition is very weird. It's if it goes around a star, and if it's round by its own gravity, then we tend to call it a planet. But just recently astronomers also put in that it cleared its orbit of other objects.
It has to be, I saw it, something about dominant or dominate its region or something like that. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. So on that basis, I don't know, maybe Earth isn't a planet either, because it's got a moon.
Yeah, exactly. And the other factor was that there's this moon around Pluto that's all about half its size, half Pluto's size.
Exactly, and that's why your Al Green music was great. Let's stay together. I think you raise another very interesting point. That's also one of the things that we're so excited about learning here, is that really the Pluto-Charon system is much more Earth-like in that regard, with Earth and Moon, and so we can learn things about two planet-like objects going around each other, just like Earth and Moon are going around each other. So it's an exciting opportunity.
And it's not an insignificant size either, this Pluto itself. Well, how would you describe it? I saw somewhere in an article that it was a 1,472-mile-wide disk of Pluto in the photo. I don't know what that meant, if that means the diameter is 1,500 miles?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. Yeah, I think the best bet is to try to put that in context. And let's use the United States as an example there. If you were to compare the diameter of the moon, of our moon, to the United States, it would cover about two-thirds of the United States. Pluto would cover about half the United States. So that gives you a rough idea.
Okay, sure. We are speaking with an astronomer physicist friend of ours from Minneapolis, or the Twin Cities, Park Kunkel, who is commenting to us on the recent NASA mission, New Horizons, the mission to Pluto and the Kuiper Belt. And let's talk for a minute about the Kuiper Belt. And, you know, is the New Horizons going to return more information about it? And has it already? Is it in any danger going through the Kuiper Belt? Let's give us a little rundown on that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the Kuiper Belt was proposed many years ago to try to explain where some of the comets that we see come from. And it looks like it's a torus-shaped field of small objects, icy, rocky, comet-like objects that are circling the sun beyond Neptune's orbit. So Pluto would then be the largest of those objects. We've discovered several others about the same size as Pluto, but Pluto's still the largest one. So it gets to rain there. And that's what we call the Kuiper Belt.
Now, let's turn to some of these amazing photos and the material that's coming back. And you can maybe walk us through some of the most interesting aspects of what the scientists are seeing.
Sure. These are just exciting. I wish we had them in front of us. Astronomy is such a visual topic, but
I actually have them up on my computer in front of me right now. So
excellent.
I understand what you mean. And I mean, folks who are listening can Google this New Horizons, and you'll find all kinds of places to look at these photos.
Right. One of the best websites is nasa.gov/New Horizons, all one word, New Horizons, and they could pull up pictures that way.
Good advice. Thank you.
And lots of good articles there as well in that one. I think that there's so many exciting things coming out here. I feel like it's Christmas time, and I'm running down the stairs, and there's a bunch of packages in front of me, and you know, I don't know which one to open first. And when I do, it's just really fun stuff to see. But one of the most exciting ones to me was seeing both Pluto and Charon, and neither one of them had very many craters on them.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at our moon, it's just covered with craters kind of thing. So here we are at Pluto and Charon, and neither one has very many craters. So Earth doesn't either, but Earth doesn't because it's got a lot of erosion and it's got an atmosphere and that kind of thing. Well, Pluto's atmosphere is too thin to prevent craters from forming. So that means that something, some geologic activity is going on Pluto, and it's probably less than 100 million years old. So that's really young, the surface is. So the question is, what's going on? What's happening? We only know of two ways to build new surfaces. You know, in the case with Earth, there's a lot of radioactive heating going on, and that's why Earth's core is still molten in there. Well, that doesn't work with Pluto because it's not big enough to have that be the possibility. And then the other one is tidal stretching, like Jupiter's moon Io gets stretched because Jupiter pulls on it so hard that it stretches the surface, and so Io is active volcanically. But again, these two are too small for that to make that kind of a difference. And so we don't know what's going on Pluto. That's really one of the exciting things.
What's the possibility? I mean, are we talking there's a molten core here or something?
We don't think there's a molten core, again, just because things are too small and too cold at this point. Mm-hmm. But again, maybe there is something going on there, and that's the part that we, maybe there's a third possibility, and I don't know what that one is in this case. But it's very clear that there's geologic and activity in the very recent past that's smoothed out the surface and hid all the craters that were there.
Yes, some of these, what are they calling it, the Sputnik region or something like that? It looks just smooth.
Yes, exactly.
You know, with a few little lines in it, but otherwise pretty smooth.
Exactly. Yeah. When you listen to some of the geologists on the New Horizons team, they're baffled. They just admit, we don't know what's forming this.
Well, I remember watching the press conference or whatever they held when the scientists were all gathering there showing off these initial photographs, and I have never seen such excitement among scientists. You know, the poor guys have been waiting for a decade to get an answer to what they're going to see, and they were so excited about it because it was so unexpected.
Yes, oh, exactly. That's one of the fun things about this is that we expected to see certain things like craters, and now we don't see any of them. What is going on? And I suspect we'll see some other things that we did not expect at all.
And then there's these ice mountains there. I mean, they're call them mountains. And I don't quite understand. It's not water ice, right? I mean, it's...
It's not liquid water ice, but it's likely going to be water.
Really?
Frozen water, yes, exactly.
That's kind of this is a silly question, I think, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you get ice without ever having water, without having liquid?
And that's been one of the fun things about astronomy in the last few years. We're basically finding water almost everywhere we look. So several of the moons of Jupiter have water on them, maybe even a slushy ocean underneath a couple of miles of frozen, and all you need is hydrogen and oxygen, and they combine pretty readily, especially out in areas beyond Jupiter where it's cold, and so water can hang around. When we look at the inner planets, it's pretty warm, so water on Mercury and Venus, for example, gets dissociated and the hydrogen flies away, and so you don't end up with much water there. But it looks like there may be water, maybe one of the common, hydrogen is the most abundant element, and so just add some oxygen to it, you got water.
Okay, so you don't add oxygen to it when it's 390 degrees below zero and get water. You get ice.
Right.
Is that what happens? It goes right, hydrogen and oxygen combine and goes right to ice.
That's right. They can still combine. When it's cold like that, they can easily stick together. When it's warm, like around Mercury, they're moving so fast that it's hard for them to hang around.
Okay. Well, we've got a ton of things to talk about. We don't have enough time to talk about it all. But the other thing I wanted you to elaborate on a little bit is how long it's going to take to get all the information back. I don't know, what do you call this? A spaceship or what are we? It's not a satellite.
But the spaceship is good.
Spaceship, okay.
It's a mission. And it's going to take, they're looking at over a year to get all this information back. Right now, they're still doing a little bit of photography at the moment, but as they speed past, now it's time to start sending this data back, and there's so much of it. So they send it back in condensed packages just to make sure they get it, and then they spend a year sending it back in uncondensed form. So that you get more of the data and in more detail. Mm-hmm. And so this information is going to be flowing in for for a year or two yet, and probably more after that when we start discovering what all the data means. So the next NASA press conference is next Friday. I don't know the time because they haven't announced that yet, but if you go on NASA TV, you can watch their next press conference, and that should be fun as well.
Okay, maybe we end up with you telling us where you already gave us the website. Let's do it again.
Sure.
And what is NASA TV, too?
Yes. So if you go to nasa.gov/New Horizons,
okay,
all one word, New Horizons, that gives you a lot of the pictures we've just been talking about, and we'll give you some information there. There's several other ones. Maybe you can put them on your website. I don't know, but here's another one, Pluto. I'm going to spell this, jhuapl.edu. So that's okay. The Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab at jhuapl. So pluto.jhuapl.edu. They've got some good stuff. And I'd also recommend, go to the Allworth Planetarium down in Duluth, or Thunder Bay's got an observatory, so lots of good resources around. If you're down in the cities, come to the Bell Museum. We've got an Explorer Dome down there as well.
Yeah, you want to say anything more about that? I wanted to give you a chance to
That's very kind of you.
That.
The Bell Museum and the Planetarium have now merged, and we're in the process of starting to build a new building over on the St. Paul campus with a planetarium in
wow.
it. So this will be fun, and hopefully we can send information out to the Allworth and the other planetariums around the state. And the Bell Museum also has traveling Explorer Domes, so we can bring our portable Explorer Dome bring it up there to Grand Marais or wherever people are interested. The Bell Museum has some other traveling exhibits, too, so it's just great. And can I remind people also, go out tonight about 8:45 and tomorrow night and look west, low in the west, Moon, Venus, and Jupiter, really bright. Should be a really fun little show.
All right. We can hope that, I think we're going to have some possibilities of viewing that up here. We have a little few more clouds up here than you guys get down in the city.
Yeah, I've heard that, yes.
And Park Kunkel, thank you so much for this fascinating talk, and I'm sure you're excited to be alive when this thing is going on. So
I certainly am, and thank you as well.
All right.
It's a pleasure.